Hey, welcome in to the latest episode of that SEC podcast, Marler Monday on a Tuesday. See you next Tuesday, buddy. How are you?
Good. Good to be here. Just, you know, having a blast. Seems like everyone's in a great mood on on every social media platform and about every topic imaginable. So it's just, it's been great. What do you want to start with? You want to talk about ice or you want to talk about the Super Bowl halftime show?
Wait a second. Who did you threaten this week?
I didn't threaten anybody. What are you talking about?
Who did you wish death upon or whatever?
I did not. I haven't done that at all. I have been very, very good. What's up, Liquid Flames?
I heard you say that on Feinbaum, too. So there must be someone coming at you. And so
no, everyone's just angry about fucking everything on social media. Like every single I cannot imagine having this firm of a stance on the fucking halftime show. I just like it's like I said this earlier today. I was like, if you're still talking about it on Tuesday, like you're the fucking loser. Like it's time to move on. And then I was made aware that apparently I'm the loser for thinking other people talking about it makes them a loser. I'm so tired of everyone yelling. I'm so tired of everyone yelling.
So on a scale of one bad bunny to 10 bad bunnies, how do you rate the halftime show?
Dude, it was an 11. It was awesome. It also made me hungry for like 18 different foods. He was like, you know, and it was like a piece of like street corn. I was like, fuck yeah, that looks awesome. That looks fantastic. What
you had, I mean, again, I knew this was coming. I heard there was outrage and all this, that, and the other, but I kept waiting for them to speak English. Was that not ever going to come? I thought I hit the, you know, they always say you hit the SAP button. It switches. I thought I did that. I was like, what's going on here?
I don't know. I mean, there was two halftime shows. You could have watched either one.
I didn't even know that either.
It doesn't make you a better person if you watch one or the other. I genuinely can't understand why anybody would be so fucking mad. Like, dude, that's the best thing about cable. There's a bazillion different, if you have Netflix or you have YouTube TV, you have Hulu, there's a bazillion options that you could have to turn on during that 40-minute window. And if you chose to just be mad instead, I mean, good for you, I guess. Go outside, touch grass, watch something else, like put on old highlights of Tavon Austin or something. I don't fucking know. Everyone is so fucking mad about fucking everything. And I'm tired of it, Mike. I'm just exhausted.
Well, I was wondering why you didn't spew any of these profanities on Feinbaum show. How was that? You just came off the Feinbaum show. Was it a good experience for you?
It was great, man. I had a lot of fun. Allie was like, why didn't you smile? And I was like, nothing in my life to smile about, for one. It was fun. I didn't know he's rocking that turtleneck now as like in an unironical way. He asked me about Bediako and my thoughts on him. And I gave the, my thoughts on it. And, you know, that's it. And then he asked me about some other stuff that I'm sure we'll talk about teams coming into the 2026 season. The Bediako thing is.
Will the team have to forfeit any wins or anything? Or is that just kind of nonsense with social media?
I think that what the NCAA committee said was they are going to figure out a way, they're going to exclude those five games from the resume when they are judging Alabama. Now, listen, if that's the case, you could also make the case that it might benefit Bama more than it would if they counted the wins, because the three wins were all quad one wins for sure. The win over Texas A&M is really big. Obviously, the win at Auburn. The 26-point win over against Missouri had nothing to do with Charles Bediako, but sure, take that one away. But if you're going to exclude those five games as a whole and not just the wins, that means you're excluding the loss to Tennessee and at home and the 23-point loss to Florida. So it's almost like, silver lining there. It feels like you might have like a little bit of a benefit. I think they probably should, just to appease fans. But here's the bigger thing too, Mike, is I have said from the beginning, no reason he was playing. I thought it was ridiculous. Like the great thing about NIL, and I wish I would have said this part on Feinbaum, the great thing about NIL was that if you are a player that doesn't want to go pro or you feel like you need to go pro from a financial standpoint, especially, and you're like, well, you know, my family's depending on me, I'm tired of being in college and not having any money. Like that's how college football was for a long time. And we saw the numbers go up to where it was like, hey, there's this many juniors that are declaring early every single year. And the number of them like declaring early increased every year. And the number of them going undrafted increased every year. And so you're like, that's a problem. Well, one of the very few positives I think in everyone's eyes that you could see from the NIL era is, you know, you don't have to go do that now. You can make real money. And in a lot of cases, Mike, way more money in college than you could professionally. And so I think that is a Carolina. What? What are we talking about, me? But you can go make a lot more money. And so Charles Bediako had that option. Like there was nobody that watched him play, even in 2023, when they were the number one team in the country, that was like, that guy is definitely going to get drafted, especially when there's only like 60 overall draft picks in the NBA. There's no reason to go pro. Now, if you want to go pro, there's endless amount of options for you to go play overseas, the G League here, obviously. But like, I've had friends that I played with in college. Like when I played baseball, they played basketball.
You have friends?
In college. I had friends that played over in like Turkey and like there's and made like 60 grand a year. Like you could make money like playing overseas. That's fine. But there also still have to be consequences. So if you're going to say, nope, I'm good on the NIL stuff, I'm still going to go pro, you should not ever in any capacity be allowed to come back. And I cannot imagine that they thought they were ever going to win this case outside of, well, the NCAA is pretty fucking stupid and no one likes them, so maybe we'll win it because of that. So that part for me is like, I thought it was dumb from the beginning, but now with this precedent being set, Mike, I know it's a long-winded answer, but what I hope happens, what?
It's a big one.
What's going on? A Texas hat. What?
That was the guy you were calling out last.
Oh
time,
yeah.
Right?
Isn't that great? I love that guy. He's hilarious. I think that the other part of it, now that you have this precedent being set, now, first off, the NCAA didn't do anything. Like the NCAA ruled him ineligible. They did the same fucking thing with Trinidad Chambliss. He's going to play. Like, so this pat on the back that Charlie Baker's giving himself, like that part is fucking ridiculous. Cause in the same breath of he gave his little victory speech, he also went and said, oh, you know what? We still need Congress to step in right away. Like, no, bitch, this is your problem. You created this. Like, I shouldn't say bitch. He's probably a nice guy. But that whole thing was created by them. So I will finally say, now that this has happened, it needs to start happening for all the other examples in college sports. And I don't know if that means right away, but I think if you were like James Nagy was drafted number 31 in the same fucking draft class and is still playing for Baylor, playing pretty poorly, by the way. But like him and two other G League players that were also still playing college basketball, I hope all three of them are gone in addition to Bediako. And then maybe in the offseason, you figure out what to do with the foreign born players that are playing, that play professionally overseas and are now playing in college. Because like, I think it's a great opportunity for them in some cases, but like you're taking away so many opportunities from high school kids too. And it's just, it's all so fucking dumb. And it's like, we've just sprinted so far past the line of reason that it's shocking to me that it was such a heated debate.
Damn, I didn't know you were going to do the Gettysburg Address over there.
Well, I mean, Feinbaum kept cutting me off. He was like, what do you think about my turtleneck? I was like, fucking hot as hell right now, Paul. Paul Feinbaum, the Sam Levitt of daytime TV.
Oh, God. Yeah, no, I can't, but the excellent points. But, hey, yeah, maybe let's talk a little basketball just because we don't do that a ton on here. But yeah. You're far more knowledgeable, I think, than Shane and I when it comes to
not everything.
But
yeah, for sure.
We've been watching a lot more basketball, but is it fair to say that Florida is the best team in the conference now? They just hammered A&M. A&M fans were all up in our mentions for weeks that they're the best, but and that doesn't mean A&M's bad. But Florida, to me, and I haven't watched a ton of it, but they seem like the clear best team.
Yeah, they are. They're great, man. They are. Pete McIver's right. Every time I get on Locked On Gamecocks, I'm like, all right, we got a quick show today. It's gonna be about 20 minutes, and it's like fucking 34 minutes long. No, I think Florida is the best team right now. I think that's like very clear to see. It kind of makes the Auburn win over them even more impressive, just because it was at home. But I mean, Florida's great. Like Florida is, they're so good in the front court. You saw they did Alabama. I mean, like that win against Alabama. And Alabama is still, this is one of the reasons I think the whole thing about them getting banned from the tournament is so fucking stupid, because they're a tournament team with or without Bediako either way. Like at that point you are now just being like, well, I hate Alabama, so I just want to see him suffer. Like you're being fucking stupid. But with Florida, you saw what they're able to do with them. They put up 100 points and only hit three pointers. Like that's insane. They put 72 points up in the paint. They're obviously very, very big down low. They've got some really, really good players. I love the Hauk kid. He is like a better's dream because he's so good from outside and also so good inside because of his size. Florida's really good, man. And I tell you what's so surprising is, man, I'm going to draw a blank on his name too. The kid that transferred from Arkansas, someone help me out in the comments here. Hey, Marler, sending hate from the 803. the kid from Arkansas. Why? It's not DJ Wagner. I can't believe I'm drawing a blank on his name, but you guys know what I'm talking about. You know, he hasn't even had a chance really to take off yet, and he was one of the biggest additions in the portal. Florida's really, really good. But I'll be honest with you, Mike, there's not a team in this conference that I think is going to be able to make the Final Four or maybe even Elite Eight, like besides Florida, because it's not a very deep conference this year. Boogie Flan, that's the one. I don't know how I forgot that.
Do you still have A&M as one of the better teams in the conference, or have they gotten slightly exposed?
I hate A&M fans are going to hate me for saying this. And maybe it's a little bit skewed now because they only lost by 3 on the road to Bama, and Bama had Bediako, who had a pretty good game that night. Pretty good. I think that they're a little bit of a fool's gold because they haven't played the strongest non-conference schedule. Every time they've played a legit ranked opponent, Tennessee, Florida, Bama wasn't ranked, but they are good enough to be, they've lost. I think they're really fun to watch. I think they're way better than anybody thought they would be in year one. They're definitely a tournament team, and they can score, man. They can really, really score with anybody. So, yeah, I mean, I'm still high on them. I think they're one of the better teams in the league, but I don't think that they are good enough to compete, I think, for an SEC title. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I will say, in my experience with anything involving sports, and you saw it with the Patriots on Sunday, you saw it all the time in college football this past year, I just like to be in a place when you're going into the postseason that you know who the fuck you are. And usually that comes from, we've played a tough schedule. We know like what it takes to beat good teams. And A&M hasn't really had to do that yet in basketball. Maybe they will, because it's the SEC and it's, you know, it's a long season, but they haven't had to do that yet. Not a fan anymore. What did I do?
He's a big A&M fan, so he's out on your ass. You know what? I've only watched them twice, and they've lost both games. But
yeah, keep doing it then. Also, I love the way I said I watched Chocolate Rain on repeat. It was Chocolate Rain.
Where do you put Kentucky in all this? Because I've watched a few games of Kentucky, and obviously it's well documented. I believe they have the most expensive roster in college basketball, probably by a wide margin, but
$22 million.
They've beaten Tennessee twice, even though Tennessee probably should have beat them twice. They blew leads both times, but what's your thoughts on Kentucky? Could they be a team that puts it together?
I mean, they've got the talent. I mean, $22 million for the roster by their own admission is crazy. Also, if you're a coach, don't fucking admit that. Like Brian Kelly was like, yeah, we spent $18 million on this roster. What's up? And you're like, no, man, don't tell anybody that. Like, that's not, no one's gonna be like, wow, they did so much with $22 million. Like, no one's gonna think that. Don't fucking tell anybody about your finances, especially the IRS. I think that Kentucky can be good. I think that they have taken a while to gel. It's kind of funny because everyone wanted Cal gone, which is beyond stupid in my opinion. But now that he's gone, the makeup of this team and the build out of the roster is almost similar to how he was. It's just not with a bunch of freshmen. It's like, it's a bunch of probably 1 to 2 year mercenaries that you brought in, and they are having a hard time figuring out how to gel, and they haven't been able to do that yet. You know, consistently. I think they're arguably the most talented team in the SEC just from a roster standpoint, but that doesn't always win you games.
What about Tennessee? How far can they go? And is Nate Emmitt, is he the best player? I don't know if he's the best player, but he seems pretty damn good to me.
First off, Cameron, what do you mean tighten up?
Tighten up, buddy.
We're down 20-something pounds right now since the start of the year. Thank you very much. I'm not going to tell you what that means.
In a month, you've lost 20 bad, pounds? But,
let's see here.
Wait a second. This is big news. You're down over 20 pounds since...
I'm not talking about it. I'm still fat.
January 1?
What
shot are you on?
What? The Lord, the Holy Spirit.
Ozempic?
No, Brozempic. it's amazing how many miles you can run on cocaine. No, I'm kidding. Thank you, Jimmy Satterfield. All right. What was the question again? Oh, Tennessee. I don't care, Mike. I hope they lose every game they play.
I mean, he's pretty damn good, isn't he?
They are... they always have dudes that can score, and they're so physical. It just hasn't really translated into the ceiling is as high as any team in the SEC for Tennessee. They are very talented. They're always going to be very well coached. I know Rick Barnes gets a ton of hate because he's never made the Final Four and the program hasn't either. And he seems always choking March and all that kind of crap. I like Rick Barnes. I think he's a really, really good coach. And there's a lot to be said for consistency, man. There's a lot to be said for winning titles. There's also a lot to be said for really, really consistent elite basketball play. And that's what he does every single year with Tennessee. The other part of that is they've been so physical defensively and been able to like protect the rim, also protect that on the perimeter. They don't have that as much this year, but they do have some scores, man. They've got some scores. I think the ceiling, like I said, is as high for them as it is anyone. They beat Houston earlier in the year. They're a team that can go win games. They just need to prove it. Get a little bit of confidence going into March.
How about Arkansas? It seems like they're getting kind of hot. You were talking about Calipari. Could they be one of the better teams?
Yeah, they are. They are. I mean, and Trevon Brazil is awesome. Dude, I got a text today from the LSU SID for basketball. It was like, hey, are you using your credential tonight? And I was like, am I in trouble? Because probably not. And because LSU sucks. And he was like, okay, there's a lot of scouts coming in to see Acuff. Acuff's awesome. He scored like 20 points or more in four straight games. He's been awesome. I love watching Trevon Brazil. He's like a Swiss Army knife. Also the coolest fucking name ever. Like that guy was born. Like if the Fast and Furious ever needed a name for an extra, it's just Trevon Brazil. Like that's awesome. I think Arkansas is they're good enough to win. Like I think multiple games in the tournament. I really do. I think they're good enough to make the Sweet 16. And dude, and again, they have like, we don't talk about DJ Wagner a lot this year. They've got weapons all over that roster that are really, really good. And I think when I think it's a team that for whatever reason, even though they're ranked in the top 25, they're still in this kind of like snake in the grass area where it's like, you know, they're kind of just like waiting in the corner a lot, like a lot of these people in the chat, just lurking in the dark for you to slip up. And I think that they're actually going to be one of the better teams when it comes to postseason play.
What about Vanderbilt? Do they have a really impressive record? Are they one of the better teams?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, Mike.
Yeah.
I hate watching Vanderbilt play. I love watching Tyler Nickel not ever hit multiple three-pointers because every time I bet on him, he doesn't. It's so hard. I don't like Vanderbilt is good, and they're able to score a lot. They have been inconsistent at like times they shouldn't have been. Like them losing to Oklahoma it's inexcusable to an extent. Like Oklahoma's not nearly good enough for them to have lost to. Like they were an 11.5-point favorite. They were at home. Catch me outside, you idiot.
Catch me out back.
Catch me out back. I think they're good. It's so fucking hard for me to ever watch Vanderbilt play basketball because that arena is awful. The only good thing that's ever come to that arena is I'm pretty sure MLK spoke there in the 60s. I forgot when, but he spoke there in like the 60s before he passed, and it was that's pretty awesome. But outside of that, that place is a dump. It's so far. Like, I don't know why. Like, if you already have to like climb stairs and go to cardio to get on the court, I hate that. Also, having the team benches in like the behind the baselines, I almost said the end zones, but the baselines, that's insane. I'm not putting pants on at all, ever.
Hey, last one I wanted to ask you about. I know it was like in the news cycle when it happened, but I still am like, I'm kind of blown away that this was allowed to happen.
Who's but away?
Stephen Pearl being you the head coach.
Who?
Stephen Pearl being the head coach of Auburn. Like, yeah. Again, I got nothing. I like Bruce Pearl. I think he's awesome.
Yeah.
I think he's the best coach in Tennessee history, obviously Auburn history. And, you know, but him like ducking out in the middle of the night right before the season so his son could take over. And I'm not saying his son's like a complete fraud or anything, but
yeah.
What do you make of Auburn? And are you I mean, I'm still to this day, anytime someone asks me about Auburn, they're like, wait a second, the coach retired right before the season so his son could take over? Like, that's like high school shit.
Yeah, it's Auburn, man. They do whatever they want and then hide behind this thin veil of like, we're so morally superior to everyone. Like, shut the fuck up. I don't mind it. I think Stephen Pearl, I truly believe, and this is also because my fiance has told me this repeatedly, I truly believe that the reason it happened is that it was planned to happen for a while now. I think Stephen Pearl has been like the coach in waiting there for a minute. I don't think they were ever going to look elsewhere. Maybe Bruce Pearl had a say in that. I know the Nepo baby comments, all that kind of stuff, like whatever. Maybe all that's true. I don't know.
He called the third down plays?
Yeah. Hugh Freeze out there barely opening his eyes. He looks like he's constantly just been stung by 1,000 bees. And that's coming from me. Okay, Justin Hatton, miss you already, bro. Thanks for checking in and saying that, though. That's sick. what? Oh, number one, Birmingham bus boycott? That happened in front of my family's house. Pretty terrible. Yeah, Mother's Day, 1961, I think. It was 1961, not 62. It's May 15th. Part of my degree is in African-American history and the Civil Rights Movement specifically, so... But that's a cool joke, Jeez Louise. Pretty cool joke. Anyway, back to the question, not about the Civil Rights Movement, but about Bruce Pearl. I think that he was handing that off to his son. I think that's fine. I don't know if it was they were going to go out and hire someone else anyway, but the timing of it was weird. I did love the video, the social media video they put out there. I thought that was pretty cool. And Bruce, like, listen, you can hate Bruce Pearl if you want. I don't know why you would. I have zero issues with him, what he did at Auburn. I thought he was fantastic. He was obviously great at resurrecting that program. He was great at Tennessee before that. He rubs people the wrong way because he's outspoken about his beliefs. But we all have our own beliefs, and we all have our own opinions. And just because they might not be the same as the person next to us does not mean they're necessarily wrong. So I have no problems with Bruce Pearl. Now, Tommy Tuberville, he sucks, but I love Bruce Pearl.
Yeah, still it strikes me that's so weird that it went down that way. But hey, I'll take your word for it. All right, let's get into. You said you wanted to piss some people off. I think is what you, if I direct quote.
When did I say that?
Or you said maybe you said you didn't want to piss people off, but I'm going to skew you towards it anyway. Who's taking the biggest step back in 26? This is something you talked about on Feinbaum. Everybody can't do better. Everybody can't kill in the transfer portal. When I ask you, who are the programs that are taking the biggest step back on the football field, where does your mind go first?
Oh, I feel like Alabama is one of them, but I don't, it's mainly because Alabama went to the second round of the college football playoff. And I don't know if they're going to do that. I don't necessarily think they're going to make the SEC championship game. I don't think they're going to make the second round of the playoff again. I said this on Feinbaum earlier. I really do think that you have to look at Bama as a 2-year type of situation because this year you only have 7 seniors. It's going to be a really young team. I think it's going to be a really talented team, by the way. I think it's going to be a really talented team. I think that the way that bringing a new offensive line coach, some of the toxicity you had in those 4 walls, especially from a coaching standpoint, is gone to Oregon State. I think the stuff that you have with some of the players, I think they're going to miss Jeremy Bernard maybe more than anybody, but that offensive line was bad last year. So I'm not super worried about some of the pieces you lost there and who you're bringing back in. I mean, there's some concerns there for sure, but I also look at them and I think, listen, if you have only 7 seniors in a day and age where we have this very small sample size, but it seems to be correct for the most part, which is, hey, the more veterans, upperclassmen, all these guys you can load your roster with, it seems to be a recipe for success. You saw with Indiana and you know, the average age there being 23 and some of these other programs like that. I think that is that's a concern with how young they are for sure.
Should Ken renew his Gator season tickets?
I don't know if you should ever do that. They're not going to take a step back.
They can't go backwards, can they?
Yeah. I think they make a step forward. I also think A&M is interesting to me because, again, they're in a situation where I'm kind of cherry picking the phrasing of what you said, which is, who takes a step back? Well, they went 11-2 last year. It's the best regular season they've had in program history. And they go 11-2. They lose in the first round of the playoff on that last second play. The schedule's not – well, let me see here. They're going to lose to Texas, even though it's at home. Tennessee is going to be tough. Oklahoma, I think South Carolina's better. Bama on the road, LSU on the road in a revenge game. I mean, like, you know, I don't know what Arizona State's going to be with Cutter Bowley as their quarterback. So there's, I would assume they're going to take a step back. The biggest question I have for them is, I love they went out and got Wilkin Formby. I love they went out and got Isaiah Horton. And here's one thing they also did, which was they were one of the few teams that they didn't really lose anybody of significance in the portal, man. They didn't lose anybody of crazy significance. I just wonder if you're talking about taking a step back, I think 9 wins is very, very doable with that schedule, but that's a step back. And I don't know if that puts you in the playoff. Now, the other thing too is losing a guy like Casey Concepcion. I love Isaiah Horton for Alabama. I thought he was great. You know, he was really good last season. Obviously a hero in that Auburn game, having 3 touchdowns. Bringing him in, also bringing in Wilkin Formby. You got to remember, Mike, one of the things that made them really good last year was going into last game of the season, they had 177 combined starts on the offensive line. That's not going to be the case this year. So I love the fact they replaced some guys there. Not really Trevon Ball from South Carolina. He's not good. I think who's the other kid they got from LSU? He was pretty tough. And I think it's a tackle. I don't think it's Tyree Adams. It's the other one. But I think, like, you're going to have to replace some bodies up front, but replacing Casey Concepcion, not just in the receiving game and the offense, but also in special teams, that's going to be tough to do. And you're going to have to do all that with a new offensive coordinator. And that's where I had the concern for A&M.
Yeah, I've heard Billy Lucci, he made an interesting point. You know, he's always going to spin it towards A&M's favor, which, you know, he could be right here, but he said, specifically, Casey Concepcion is a smaller guy compared to Horton, who's like 6'4", I think.
Yeah, he is.
And you would imagine he has a significantly larger catch radius than Casey Concepcion. So if Marcel Reed's a little inaccurate,
that's fair, actually.
He's, he's got a bigger catch radius. So, I mean, there's something there. But
yeah.
Is it fair? So Steven and I, we talked last night about buy, sell, or holding stock into an SEC program. And I didn't say specifically for next season. I'm just looking more of like the last 5 years and whether the next 5 will be better or worse or the same, right?
Oh, the next 5, I think that they are going to continue to get better. I love Mike Elko. I think he's going to be great.
Yeah.
I think he already is great. And so, I think from last year to this year, it's hard for me to look at a team that just went 11-1. And that's anybody. It's hard for me to look at Georgia, who just went 11-1, and say, "Oh yeah, yeah, they're not gonna take a step back," because you won 11 games last year. So, you know, I think A&M is they are built to succeed. I've said this over and over, man. I am blown away, just like you said, that what Mike Elko has been able to do in such a short turnaround, which is make A&M cool and fun and like a desirable place to go out of high school and then also in the portal, not just because they have money, but because you've created an environment there that's like, fuck yeah, I would want to play for that. Like it's that entire atmosphere is awesome. And so I do think they're going to be better in the long run. I just don't know if they're going to get to 11 wins again this season. That's all.
Hey, how about we talk Ole Miss for old David Chambers? He's pretty fired up here, but
the one that was such a bitch about last time that came in here. And they took the words out of context that I said. That's fucking.
But Ole Miss is Ole Miss poised to go backwards. I mean, they almost have to be, right?
Ole Miss will never lose again. Their fans are going to live forever, and that is the greatest single place in the world. And so, I think you look at Ole Miss's schedule, and I say, wow. I mean, are they bending the fuck out of the rules and getting another year of eligibility for Trinidad Chambliss? Yes, but they should be allowed to because they're America's team and everyone loves them. You know what I mean? I mean, like, it's
Ole Miss. Wait, how are they bending the rules?
Hold on, Mike. Hold on. Ole Miss has never done anything wrong and they never will. And also, that goes for the entire state. You know what I mean? I think if you're looking for a moral beacon, it's definitely Ole Miss. And I think that Pete Golding, I do think Pete Golding is. I think that's a lot. I think Pete Golding's gonna do a great job, man. I love Pete Golding. I think it's so refreshing to watch a guy that's like genuinely just about ball, that does not fucking care about anything else. Like it's also nice and refreshing to see somebody that talks like me into a camera and he's like, nah, I don't really give a shit about that. Whoever runs out of the fucking tunnel. I tell you everything I need to know about Pete Golding, I saw at the Fiesta Bowl. And I don't care how dramatic this sounds. I firmly believe this in my heart of hearts. This is who he is as a person. It's the most confident I would ever, like most confidence I would ever need to have in him for moving forward. When they ran out of the tunnel and they're going out on the field, the team's going out onto the field, right? He took a direct left behind the cheerleaders on the sideline and ran straight to the sideline to his position and his post, whatever. It was like, let's just fucking kick this thing off, spot the ball. He is, I think, the most genuine coach maybe in the entire SEC. I'm fired up to see what they look like this year. Like, I think they did a great job in the portal. They are one of the teams that I keep bragging about how great of a job they did with retention and what he was able to do to keep everything together when everyone thought they were going to lose. Players to Ole Miss or to LSU especially, I thought he did a great job. So I like what he's been able to do. I don't know if he would, if it's like the best way he's gone about some things. The thing with Clemson I thought was kind of ridiculous. But I can also say that I bet he's just handling things the same way other coaches are also handling things. And it's just not as public or vocal. That's all. So I like him. I think.
Do you agree with this comment? Ole Miss 10-2 at Roust.
Well, show me the schedule.
Okay.
They're going to bitch slap LSU once. I doubt it. I mean, I don't know if that's going to happen, but it'll be a great game. Where are the losses going to come? I mean, the loss, I would say probably at Texas.
I mean, LSU is going to be a war.
I think that's Oklahoma 2 years in a row. That's stupid. I don't like that.
I think LSU is a complete toss up. I could see either team winning.
I do not. But
I think at Texas is a loss.
Yeah, I think at Texas is a loss. I think Georgia at home is intriguing. I think at Texas is a loss. I think they will lose one of those two games with Georgia and Oklahoma. And that's all I'll say. So maybe 10-2 at worst, man. Now here's the question. If it's not 10-2 at worst, then I still think that they're probably built for success. I think one of the things people are not like talking enough about is this John David Baker guy, the guy from East Carolina. I mean, he's a good OC. And I love the fact that he was able to kind of be a part of the mix during the playoff run and like kind of, you know, understand, like go through the practice, see how Golding is going to run stuff, also get to help with just some of like the planning, all that kind of shit. If this all hinges on Chambliss. And I have zero doubts that he's going to play. Whether the NCAA, who has said five times now, he is ineligible. The NCAA has said it five times. I still say they're going to find a way to play. And if they do, great. But I also think they're kind of built for the future and success there with Deuce Knight and some of the other pieces they're going to have around them. I think that Golding is, they got to take a step forward again defensively, because that defense from two seasons ago, if they can ever find a way to pair it with the offense they had a season ago, they're going to be very, very tough.
Hey, interesting question here from Jimmy. Appreciate you. Will 9-3 get you in the playoffs? Again, we're going to a 9-game SEC schedule. I think that fans need to brace themselves for, 9-3 being a really good year. And I don't know that it gets you in. I think it depends on your schedule. It depends on who else is in the mix, not only in the SEC, but across the country. But I think 9-3 conceivably could get you in a lot of years in a 9-game SEC schedule. What's your thoughts?
So I'm going to make this comparison, regrettably, but I'm going to do it anyway. And you're going to end up clipping it and ruining my life on social media, but that's fine. It's all about perspective with moving forward with the SEC. Don't fucking clip this. It's all about perspective moving forward. So like in the past, if you go 11-1, that's a great season. 10-2, good season, but you're not going to win games. If you're a program like LSU, Alabama, Texas, well, Texas will tell you that like 9-3 is not acceptable, but fuck off. But Georgia, like some of these things, 9-3 is a good season. Like we're not used, as college football fans, we're not used to having three losses in a season and still deeming that a successful year. The Seattle Seahawks just went 14-3. They won the Super Bowl, or 15-3 with the Super Bowl. And that's a normal thing in the NFL for a long time. Like you think of the Giants, the year they beat the Patriots, so who were like 18-0, the Giants were 9-7 in the regular season, got to the playoffs, won a bunch of games, blah, blah, blah. I don't personally like it, but you need to just figure out a way to have that, since that is the new normal, to accept that that's the new normal and be like, okay, well, this is how things are going to be from now on. So a three-loss season, it still could get you in the playoff. And it doesn't mean you're a bad team. You're just playing a lot of really, really good teams. I compare it to the fact that, like, listen, I'm 39. I used to just sleep like a baby until like 2 p.m. You know what I mean? It was fucking awesome. I miss those days a lot. Now, if I don't have to wake up in the middle of the night to pee more than once, I'm like, fuck yeah, prostate. That's awesome. Good on you, dude. You just slept through the night, got some REM sleep, didn't have to get up and pee all night. I love that. It's all about managing your expectations of where you're at in life and obviously with college football. So I think that works.
But managing expectations, that sounds great. It's not going to happen, is it?
Who's half pint? What? Wait, what happened?
I'm just saying that what you're saying is accurate, but
I'm down to once a night.
but I don't think expectations realistically will be reset by most fan bases.
No, I don't think they will either. I'm telling that's what they should do. I'm trying to give you some good advice. I don't think they're going to do it. I think
Alabama could fire their coach at 9-3, you know,
which
would be asinine, but they might do it, you know.
Here's the other part too. This is the thing I keep saying. In this day and age of the portal, you better have someone in your back pocket that you know you're going to be able to go hire. You better not sit here and take a step down and wonder what you're going to be like and have any sort of uncertainty around who the next hire is. Because if you put yourself in that boat, and you say, well, we are tired of losing. We got to go fire somebody. Like LSU. Again, the whole conversation that was had was like during the Vanderbilt loss, after that week, it was like, yeah, but we're not going to fire Kelly. There's no appetite to do so. A week later, like, you know, we don't want to pay that $54 million. A week later, yeah, we're firing him. Who cares? We're moving on. So here's the other part that people seem to not understand, I think, a lot with when it comes to the world of college sports now. I talked about this yesterday on the Locked On show about Lamont Paris. And I think with like this, that's a basketball situation, but like you think about firing someone, if you're going to fire them, you have to understand what's coming next, because to get another coach in here, that means you're going to have to fire, pay the buyout, right? Whatever the buyout is, which at this day and age is usually fucking astronomical. So let's just say on the low end, it's 20 to 25 million for the buyout. Then you got to pay the buyout for all the coaches, which is probably around another 5 million at least. Then you got to figure out a way to go entice someone else to come in for usually more money, especially more money than they're already getting paid somewhere else. You bring them in, then you got to hire their staff. And more than anything, you have to sell them on, all right, we're going to give you the resources to be successful. Because otherwise, no one's going to leave their current job if they don't have those resources. So unless you're able to promise them, hey, this is how much money we are going to spend on the roster, not just in year one, but in several years, to make sure that you are able to compete, especially in a league like the SEC. So firing a coach, if you're Alabama, like firing a coach in a league where everyone's really good. And here's the other part too, Mike, you have to figure out a way, like the amount of money this is all costing. I've said this over and over with LSU. This is a $200 million cycle for them. Like paying Alf Brian Kelly was $54 million. Then all of his coaches run around $10 million. You bring in Kiffin at $91 million. Then they talk about the roster being around $40 and all of his hires and all that kind of shit. Again, you think about the fact that a couple years ago, just 2 years ago, when Ohio State won the national title, the conversation around that team was, well, they only won because they had a $20 million roster. These teams are spending $20 million on their roster. Texas, Ohio State, Oregon, like Texas Tech now. And now, just 2 years, like a year later, really, that this cycle, you're talking about $40 million rosters being at the top. And if you're Auburn spent $30 million, do you think Auburn's roster that they brought in is worth $30 million considering everyone they lost? I don't. Like, but that's what you have to spend and figure out like how you're going to compete. So if you fire Kalen DeBoer or you fire someone else in this league, you better fucking hope you have a foolproof plan and you're not rolling the dice. Because if you are, you're going to fall a lot in comparison to some of these other programs, and it's going to take a while to get back up.
Yeah, and I think you might be onto something. Something I never really even considered here. But just look around at the hires we made this offseason, Chris, where I know Kiffin, you know, he was already in the conference, so I don't really count him, but that he went from the SEC to the SEC, obviously. Look at all the other hires. I mean, we had to get lower level guys. Now, I think good coaches at Florida and Auburn. I mean, these guys, you know, are looking for their big break, essentially, in the power league. Arkansas, same thing. Kentucky, they hired a guy that's literally never been a head coach. And then Ole Miss, now maybe a little bit different circumstance there because they had a playoff run. Mm-hmm. But I wonder how attractive it is to get these coaches in here, which you come into this conference, you're going to get paid. So I think some people look at it as like, hey, well, I mean, of course, anybody will want one of these jobs. They'll get paid. But if you get how many guys get fired in the SEC, Chris, and like have a career after that? It's a pretty small percentage, though.
Yeah. I mean, Dan Mullen's having success, but he's at UNLV. Thanks, VBF 90. I don't disagree with you. That's fine. This is just my face.
That's a punchable face I've ever seen.
Wild. I remember one time when I was at Houston, somebody came in and they go, "You're really funny, but you have such a gay face." And I was like, I don't even know what that means. what? I get what you're saying. I have said this since 2014 or whatever Bielema came to the league. It was like, why the fuck would you? Like if you were at a place, and this is a different time because it was at the time when the Big Ten was still 12 teams, I think, instead of 14, now 18. But it was like, if you're in a place that's like stable, I know there's this competition and drive to want to win. But like I said with Rick Barnes earlier, there's a lot to be said for consistency. And it's one of those.
What?
That's so good. Subarus. I think that it's odd watching some of people like you, if you're a coordinator and you want to come here and you get a job opportunity, totally get that. But you are taking a big step and a big risk if you are leaving one place to come to another. Because here's the thing. The Big Ten's been great and they've won the last three national championships. Like there are blue blood programs there. Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State. Obviously Oregon's really good. Southern Cal should be good. Like they got a lot of talent there. But the rest of that conference is for the most part dog shit. And so if you're going to get a job at a premier place there, like Southern Cal, Oregon, the other three that I mentioned, I get it. Like that's great. In the SEC, if you go get a job at Arkansas, this is not a shot at Arkansas. It's just a very real question. Where's the ceiling for you? This is why I kept saying they shouldn't have fired Sam Pittman. Remember the stats I brought up with Sam Pittman? Sam Pittman's losses, 71% of his losses as a coach came against top 25 opponents. He had, at the end of his tenure at Arkansas, it was either 49 or 51% of his overall games that he coached were against top 25 teams. Like, that is a fucking brutal thing to have to sift through. And not just one year, every year. There was not a year where he played less than four ranked opponents, and there were multiple years in his very small time at Arkansas where he played six ranked opponents in a 12 or 13 game schedule. I mean, that's impossible. And so I think when you look at it through that lens and you're trying to say what is the realistic ceiling, because you're going to see a lot of this turnover and churning and stuff like that from some of these lower level, lower tier teams like Mississippi State, Arkansas, Kentucky, where they're like, you know, I think moving forward, like if you don't have success with Will Stein, how long is Will Stein going to stay there? Because there's a clear ceiling above a lot of these schools, and there has been for fucking decades or centuries in some cases. And I don't know if NIL is going to somehow dig them out of that. That's kind of fair. Yeah. I don't mean it's in a row. I don't mean it. Listen, with all due respect.
Hey, I want to go back to this comment from William. He left it a little while ago, but it was, that's not that one. He basically said, you know, all this, here we go. Shout out William.
Parler has one over here. That's fair. Yeah.
Hugh Freeze, the escort man. Bruce Pearl lying to the NCAA investigators, and Auburn has the nerve to call Nate Oates a scumbag. Do you believe any of that?
I'm not going to weigh in on that because I don't think here's the thing. You can hate Nate Oates all you want, and I fully understand why people do. Fully get it. Not going to sit here and argue with you on it and try to change your mind. I just don't fucking care. I just don't care. But what I will also tell you is in this day and age where winning is everything, I thought he made a good point. I never thought Bediako should be eligible. I have to preface this because people are so fucking fragile and angry on, and a lot of times both at the same time in equal amounts, me, on social media, where they're like, ah, no matter what. I don't think he should have ever been eligible. Is that really significantly worse? Is he a scumbag for hearing a guy that's like, hey, listen, there's all these G League players playing already. One of them came over to Baylor in the middle of the season. We have an opportunity where we can at least try that, and it might go through. Should we do that? Because I want to get my degree, I want to do whatever, and I want to come back to school. It is stupid, it is illogical, and I can't believe it ever even happened, right, in this world of college sports. But you've got guys going out here and getting a ninth year of eligibility. You've got guys out here like Trinidad Chambliss, who's going to fucking sue the NCAA because he's not allowed a 6 year of eligibility. When, like, we're pretending that JUCO doesn't matter. We're pretending that Division II doesn't matter. And like all these things that are so fucking dumb, but we're mad because, hey, this guy was going to let one of his former players come in. I get it, but like, I don't think it's significantly worse than the shit with Baylor. Like, on or off the court, I think it's there's a lot to be said about Baylor being a dog shit program, but bringing in a G League player like that in the middle of the year and saying like, what, that guy was drafted. He was drafted number 31 in the draft. And he get like, Bediako's case is fucking dumb. I get it. Like, but at the same time, I'm not going to sit here and argue apples and oranges of which coach is the fucking worst. The answer is Hugh Freeze.
Okay. I think that's fair. I would 1,000% agree with that. Hey, since the last time you've been on, we've had, was it the first? No, I guess it was the second.
Auburn podcasters are saying that, by the way? I want to know that. I want to know that because I would love to call them out on social media about it.
I guess first media opportunity, right, for Lane Kiffin, other than when he got officially hired, of course. So were there any takeaways from that last week that stood out to you?
I had to go take engagement photos in New Orleans.
Missed that whole thing?
I missed the whole thing.
All you really missed, I'm sure I don't know if you went back and watched it, but, you know, just him. LSU's different, buddy. Oh, man, let me tell you, these halls, walking them, it's just different here. You know, it just means more. Yeah, he's in full salesman mode.
I think he's going to win. I do think he's going to win at LSU. I have a hard time. Just my voice. It's just my voice, David. Stop, David. The barn sang it. I love Zach Blackerby. I'm not gonna ever say anything bad about Zach. Zach is the best, and he's a great person off air and on air. But calling me a scumbag is like, I mean, in this day and age, like, there are no fucking rules about anything. So, like, are we really surprised again? Okay, so I think LSU is going to win. Listen, you may not want to hear it. It's dumb, and it's getting to be very, very. No, he does the yoga thing way too early for me. it's getting to be cliche and all that kind of shit. But I'm telling you, man, as somebody that lives here in Louisiana, I fucking love Louisiana. I love Louisiana so much. There's no place on earth that's like this, and the culture's awesome. Like it is. I've lived in so many places in the Southeast where you have this bullshit Southern hospitality, but it's like, this moment you turn your back, it's like these fucking comments in here that are just like a lot of bless your hearts, a lot of like, you know, you're not a part of the clique, or you're like a lot of, you know, just really shitty, shady things. A lot of fake Southern hospitality, right? A lot of fake smiles with deviled eggs. That's a lot of the Southeast. LSU and Louisiana, man, they either love you or hate you. They don't really make a big to do or secret about not liking you if they don't. I love this place. I think he's right. And also he came at a time too where you could sit here and say, well, it's not that much different than Mississippi. And he obviously had a lot of success in Mississippi. But in my experience, if you're that angry about something, especially in the state of Mississippi, right? Like with the success he had there, it's partially because they don't love the way he left for sure. But also it's partially because they know part of it's true. And you're going into the state of Louisiana, Mike, where you are the flagship school. Like everyone in this state, for the most part, usually wants to come here. You have five-star players in the 2027 class alone in this state. Five. You have five players ranked in the top 18 in the early rankings for the 2027 class. So you talk about being able to combine that with what he does in the portal. And again, here's the thing: you've had at LSU, you've had a really bad year offensively, where you were like, You thought you're gonna be great. You put together this great roster, and you couldn't fucking score points. You couldn't run the ball. That is a question that will never, ever, ever. It'll never have that question again at this school as long as Lane Kiffin's the head coach. He is not going to struggle offensively. And neither is that side of the ball. So I think he's gonna win. I think the thing that kind of sucks about that for a lot of people is we just finally started liking him. Like he finally turned the corner and was like, Lane's kind of cool. And then it was like, no. He is no, we don't like him anymore. And I get why.
And now he's posting about DILFs.
So I do wish he would just like take a step back on some of the tweets. Like, listen, here's how you know it's bad. When Mike is sending me texts of tweets, like, dude, this is a lot. Like that is when me and Mike are like, oh, that's frowned upon. That's how you know it's bad. And I think that is, what's my opinion on ice? The Sonic crushed ice is superior to all. And if you are not a part of the superior Sonic ice, I think you should probably leave. That's a joke, guys.
True story. The closest restaurant, and it is literally, you could throw a football to Shane's house.
Yeah.
Is Sonic. Just thought you'd know that. I'd like to know that.
Picture of Shane buying that house and sitting out front. It's like location, location, dude. Overpaid the fuck out of this house. It's a duplex. I'll knock down the walls. I don't care. Kool-Aid man, right through the walls. Boom.
It is a duplex. I used to live on the other side of it.
Okay, now hear me out. If we can figure out a way where you guys are on both sides of a Sonic and I can live in the Sonic, we have hit heat. That's exactly what we mean.
Cherry limeade for the win.
Yeah, very good. Also, great Diet Cokes. Also, I love the fact that they're like, they really made carnival food into like a dining option. Like it's like somebody was at Sonic and they were like, dude, you know what's fucking awesome? The county fair. And they're like, oh yeah, I love playing games and riding rides. Like, no, fuck that. Like, just the food, the empty calories specifically at a carnival or a county fair. What if we turn that into a restaurant? They're like, you want people to drive through and shit their pants with foot long corn dogs and chili cheese dogs? Like, yeah, they're like, yeah, sure, man. This is America. Roll Tide.
And shout out Ronnie. He's 100% right. Shane, he doesn't walk there. He rides his golf cart.
Does Shane own a golf cart?
No, but he's thinking about it.
How much money are y'all making? That's such a flex, dude. Like, I feel like a golf cart now is what used to be the garage fridge for us, like millennials and stuff. Like, when I would go to my friend's house, they had a garage fridge. I was like, holy fuck, that's so much Mr. Pibb. That's awesome. Like, good for they have Barks. No one's just buying root beer casually. Now if you have a golf cart, that's pretty awesome.
Hey, well, the final thing that I've got for you here, it was kind of been in the news since the last time we talked, and I think based on some of your comments, you may be against this.
Oh, boy.
Joey Aguilar, should he be able to get an eighth year of college football?
I don't know the ins and outs of his case, so I don't want to speak on it with ignorance.
He's basically doing word for word what Pavia did. Where they're saying, hey, he stands to make millions of dollars.
Right.
And JUCO shouldn't count. He's saying JUCO at all shouldn't count.
I thought this picture you're showing was his college career. And it's not so far off.
It would quite literally be his eighth year of college football. He didn't play all 8 years, but it quite literally would be 8 years in college.
Bye, David Chambers. Hope you have a fucking awful night. So here's what I think about this. When people make the low hanging fruit comments and cliches of like, it's time to get a job, buddy, get ready to learn McDonald's or whatever. But like that whole thing, there is not a single person in this area, like of the comments or in general, that when given the option to go back to college for another year or go to the real world, is ever choosing the real world. College is fucking awesome. It was the best 5.5 years of my life, besides the ones I'll have now with my fiance. But like, it is, it, giving someone the chance to go back to college and make millions of dollars, I am all for that opportunity. And I don't judge anyone for choosing that at all. But what the fuck are we doing? At some point, what are we doing? Like, JUCO does count. It's called junior college. There's only two words. One of the words is college. You're in college. Like, Division II sports, as a former Division II athlete, that counts. That fucking counts. Like, and so this idea that we're sitting here and saying, well, I mean, that shouldn't count. You should be getting an extra year. We already did this shit with COVID, and we got so lax on the rules. And it's like, and here's what really sucks the most, Mike. And this is not just in football, but it's the case with every single fucking thing that is ever argued about, especially on social media now. If I look at you and I say, hey, I don't agree with that, instead of somebody saying, oh, I see where your point is. I see where you're coming from. Like, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, this guy did it. But what about this guy? And you're like, I don't care. At some point, you have to draw a line in the sand and get back to normalcy and say, hey, the Pavia thing, kind of fucking stupid. Probably shouldn't have been in college for another year. So if he is going to copycat that, you at the very least, you have to say, this is the last year this is being allowed. Like, moving forward, it's not happening anymore. These are the fucking rules. You have to have rules. You have to have law and order, Mike. You have to have law and order. But, you know, since we don't have them for certain cases, it's like all these idiots are pointing and it's like, well, that guy did it. That guy did it. And you're like, yeah, all of you are wrong. Like it's Bediako. It's Trinidad. It's Diego. It's like at some point, fucking please go back to letting high school kids play college sports. Please stop making, like, you know, in baseball, Mike, everyone talks about this, like the transport of baseball. I can tell you firsthand, as somebody that played baseball my whole life and played throughout college, if you are 23 in college, you're not getting drafted. Unless you're throwing 100 miles an hour, you're not getting drafted into play professional baseball at 23. Like, you are doing yourself a disservice if you're bringing all these kids, and all of it's such a band-aid to put over the sport and say, well, we just got to win. We just got to win. And it's like, at some point, you have got to fucking hit the refresh button. Why is he always yelling? Because I'm mad. But it's just so annoying. It's just, all of it's so dumb.
Would it surprise you, though, that I'd say, you know, rough estimate, I'd say 75 to 80% of Tennessee fans that I've seen online, they don't want Joey Aguilar back.
I hope he doesn't come back, because they're gonna take a step back if he's not there.
Do you think?
Who are they going to play? The kid from Colorado? Staub?
No, they like the redshirt freshman, George McIntyre.
Worst name in America.
And then they got a five-star freshman coming in, too. So
that George McIntyre sounds like if pleated pants came to life. That is the fucking worst name imaginable. But I bet he's pretty good.
He was, he chose Tennessee over Alabama. Suck it.
Yeah, would he have played? Probably not.
He would be starting at Bama already.
I don't know about that. Vladimir Putin will be making an appearance at the Auburn spring game. That's fun. Oh man. Yeah. I don't know, man. I'm so tired of how we keep just bending the rules more and more. And it's like, there's a case for a lot of these kids where it's like, well, that guy did it. Why isn't he allowed to do it? And it's also kind of like, you know, just fucking, can we just get back to something that is remotely close to normalcy? Like, some semblance of normalcy would be great. And I do think what's crazy to me, and I said this earlier today, shameless plug in my article at losingasports.net, which was the NCAA kind of applauding these decisions. Like, yes, we finally did it. Like they took part in creating all this instability, and they did such a bad job at figuring out what decisions, Mike, you could have made black and white decisions made blanket statements over certain things and said, nope, if it falls under this category, that's it. Like, they're done. I don't want to get all sassy like that. That was weird. Not going to help with any of the accusations. But like, if you put just a blanket statement over these things and said, if you fall into this category in any one of these little boxes, you're out. That's the rule. I think it would have been frustrating and unfair in a lot of situations, and people would have gotten mad about it, but at least you knew the rules. But like, they were so bad from case to case. Remember when Missouri got fucking a bowl ban because they were being extorted by a person that was trying to be paid to do homework for athletes? And then Missouri self-reported to NCAA. They're like, that's not good enough. You have a one-year bowl ban. You're like, how? Like, so they did such a bad job at monitoring any of this for so long. And now it's hard to really agree with either side. It's fucking, it's just annoying, man.
Have you been watching any Winter Olympics?
How fucking dumb do you have to be to spell luge like that? Like, how fucking stupid do you have to be, Louise, to spell luge? L-O-O-G-E. What happened here? Hold on. Hold on, I'm reading something. Okay, well, I just think... I don't remember what you're talking about. What were you saying? I lost my train of thought.
I'm just wondering if you watched any of the luge or Winter Olympics.
Dude, here's what I love about the Winter Olympics, okay? Do you remember the last Winter Olympics and that guy got his penis frozen?
No, I must have missed that.
Oh, I wish I didn't do that face after I said penis, but listen.
What's his name? Chris Marler?
Stay with me for 3 minutes. Stay with me for 3 more minutes. It's all it's going to take talking about penises. So here's the deal. In the 2022 Olympics, they did the cross-country skiing, and it was so cold wherever they were doing it. It was like, listen, it's supposed to be a 50-kilometer thing. They're like, it's too long. Can't do it. It's too cold. You cannot do it. So they bumped it down to like 30. And then like the day of, it's like, it's still too cold. So they were like, all right, we're going to do 15 kilometers. So basically they were doing like 18.6 miles for the long distance thing. That was the whole thing. So they decided to do it. And this guy has to be helped off the course. And he had to end it early because his penis froze. And so here was the thing, Mike. He could have told them anything happened. He could have said, tweaked my hamstring, knee injury, ankle flared up. And he was like, I got to be honest with you guys, my penis froze. And then when they brought it up to him in the post whatever interview, he not only willingly told them about it, he said it was an ongoing injury. So like, yeah, just nagging bursitis on my dick. It was hilarious. Now, here's the other thing about the Winter Olympics that I love too, Mike, is this. Most of the events are the dumbest things imaginable. Like because there was no cable or internet to ever do stuff before. They were like, so what are you doing today? I don't know. I'm going to go ski through 100 miles of snow and then shoot things. That's survival. That's not an Olympic sport. Also, you know that there's also the Paralympics where it's not just people that are like missing limbs or anything. They have blind downhill skiing. And if we are being honest, I swear to God, this is a real thing. If you are blind downhill skiing, that is one of the bravest things I've ever heard of. It is also the worst parenting to ever get your kid involved in that sport. Like, I thought Casey Anthony was bad. If you're a fucking parent and you're throwing your kid down a mountain with no visual, like, that's incredible, man. Anyway, rest in peace, Lindsey Vonn.
Do they put Braille in the snow or anything? Or?
No, they have someone go with them, and they're like, left, left. they ski with them, and they give them like an idea of the course and go through it. And the people go through it, and they do well. Not Lindsey Vonn. But, I mean, it's just... It's crazy to me that the Winter Olympics is even a thing. The whole point of the Olympics is, for the Winter Olympics is like, hey man, what are you doing? Do you want to go put on some really tight pants and just fucking hurl yourself down the ice? Like they're running on knives. They like speed skating on knives. It's incredible. It's incredible.
All right. Well, hey, I think that's a perfect place to end it. You got anything to plug or tell the cousins how to follow you?
If you want more talk about frozen penises and South Carolina Gamecocks, you can head on down to Locked On Cocks.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.